Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types from a left-wing perspective. It is Saturday, August 12th, 2017, and we are watching in real time things unfold in Charlottesville, Virginia. So we're going to be talking quite a bit about that for obvious reasons. I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And momentarily, President Trump is expected to say something ostensibly about what's going on in Charlottesville. Just to bring you up to speed, over the last 48 hours or so, white supremacist, quote, protesters have sort of descended on the city of Charlottesville, Virginia, which is a small college town. It's home to the University of Virginia. They've been coming from all over, North Carolina, West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, and basically taking over the town. And a large group of, as you might have expected, anti-fascist, right-wing, neo-Nazi protesters have joined. There's been some violence, and just now, within the past hour, a car plowed into a group of the anti-racist protesters and injured quite a few people. I've seen on Twitter that perhaps they have apprehended the driver of that car, although that is still unclear. There's lots of unanswered questions. There's chaos still going on. Some parts of the city look like they've calmed down. The police presence is finally sort of there out in force. There was talk earlier today. There wasn't much of a police presence. Of course, Charlottesville, the city of Charlottesville itself, is not really equipped to handle this. Like I said, it's basically a college town. A lot of these people that have come in, both the Nazi and anti-Nazi people, probably a lot of them from out of state, from out of town. So just a dangerous, combustible, violent, terrifying situation. And we're kind of watching it in real time unfolding, and we're going to talk about it and whatever else we can get to. Personally, as you can imagine, we're kind of shaken by this, and I don't think this is going to be your regular podcast by any means.
No, not today.
We'll kind of try to tell you what's going on. We'll talk about the broader political implications. We'll try not to be just completely partisan about it as much as we can be.
I just, my heart hurts today. This, it's just awful. I mean, it's just hate and racism in its most bald face. You know, I don't know how to talk about it. It's just awful.
Well, it's our job. So let's try. Let's get political for a second and say that.
So this white supremacist rally is called Unite the Right.
Yes.
And they are billing it as the largest group of white supremacists to convene ever, which is great.
Maybe Trump will brag
about
that.
Is this the same group that Airbnb canceled a bunch of reservations about?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, this is them.
Yeah, so
which they were very, very upset about.
Yes, they're very upset about it.
So
like
they may sue, but they're boycotting.
Oh, well, good.
Is great.
I don't care about that. Unite the Right, and it's just absolute bald white supremacy. There's no hoods because you don't have to have them anymore, because Trump said it's okay to be racist. So they are chanting in the streets, you will not replace us. Jew will not replace us. Carrying tiki torches, which the internet's been having a good time with.
Yeah.
Carrying tiki torches, chanting, you will not replace us, Jew will not replace us, in the streets of Virginia in 2017.
That's real subtle. Anyway, Rachel's slapping me because I'm still checking Twitter. I'm just trying to get some updates in real time as to what's going on. We have MSNBC on in the background. We're trying to bring you, by the time you hear this episode, of course, there will likely be more news out. But, like, here's the bottom line. It was this week, I think, wasn't it, that you had Stephen Miller up at the podium in the White House giving a very not hardly even veiled white supremacist screed. Yep. You had Sebastian Gorka literally a couple days ago. Why they keep sticking cameras in this guy's face, I don't know, let alone why he's still allowed to be in the White House.
Yeah.
But he said we have to stop focusing on white supremacist groups because they're not really a threat. Tell that to the people who just got mowed down by a car in Charlottesville, I guess. And the president, and I've heard a few earlier in the day before the terrorist attack, because that's what it is. They're not going to call it that, but that's what it is. You had some GOP type officials giving very, very partisan both sides and bringing up the Steve Scalise shooting as if that has to do something with white nationalists. And talking about how, you know, the both sides are at fault here and violence isn't good. We all need to come together, but something both sides.
Look, both sides aren't doing this. Both sides aren't doing this. This is a rebirth of white supremacy, period. And the reason for that is not because liberals are bad and they didn't listen to white economic anxiety. The reason for that is that we had a black president and people didn't like that. And we had a surge of white nationalism via the Tea Party, and Donald Trump decided that that would be a good thing to talk about and
to win on.
To win on, and he did. And then he's continued to talk about it and continued to not even dog whistle, but just pretty much the fact that like Stephen Miller and Gorka
Bannon
are in the White House for me is enough to say that this president does not care about being called racist or having any sort of like optics or public perception of that being bad. Like we're fully just saying white supremacy is our platform.
This is the bottom line, okay? Whatever Trump gets up and says, and I'm not going to listen to it. Whatever he gets up and says, it's probably not going to be magnanimous. It'll probably be grossly partisan. But unless it says, I am firing Sebastian Gorka, Stephen Miller, and Steve Bannon, it's really meaningless. Whatever he's going to say is completely meaningless. So, in short, I'm not really interested.
Yeah. He's not going to say, oh, isn't this awful? That these white supremacists are gathering in this town and white supremacy is bad and racism is bad and the people in my, you know, inner circle who are racist are fired. He's not going to say that. And I would like
he might say the first part, but he's not going to do the second part.
I would like to, I don't, this is a forming thought that I would like to discuss, and maybe this isn't the right way to do it, but I don't care. It's interesting to me that we talk so much, or they talk so much about Islamism and Islam as, you know, violence and ISIS and how bad it is and these terrorist attacks that take place and what just happened in Charlottesville with the car is a tool that ISIS and these Islamist groups use and that they've talked about. They said, you know,
it's low tech, it's easy, soft
it's
targets.
Easy. It's you
all
know,
you have to do, all you have to know how to do is drive a car.
Yeah. There's no like chatter that happens. There's no, you know, organizing that needs to happen. All you have to do is have a car and drive it into a crowd of people. And that's something that they've done in Europe multiple times, as we've
seen
in
Germany, London, and France.
And so for a white supremacist, racist, white person to drive a car in the United States into a crowd of protesters, there's something about that that I think we need to think about. Like, this is a terrorist attack, and they're using the same tactics as ISIS uses.
There are some people from the scene supposedly reporting that some people or the police seem to think that it wasn't terrorism, that it was just a person who was scared and that people were hitting their car.
No.
The video doesn't show that at
it.
All, so
I watched it. I hope I never have to see it again.
Extraordinarily dubious of that explanation at this point.
I'm not gonna feed into this narrative of maybe it was something blah blah. We don't do that for anything else. You know, I watched it. That car was driving on a street that
from four blocks away
where there was no one, and drove into another car and threw several people on purpose, and then backed up and went the other way. That this was not. I'm scared. If you're scared, why are you driving into the crowd?
Yeah.
You don't. You drive away from the crowd.
You would think.
So, I just think it's, you know, the media, particularly the mainstream media, not to be Donald Trump about it, but they have a really hard time talking about U.S. born citizens or white people as terrorists. They'll call them anything else: lone wolf, mentally ill, lone shooter, you know, mass shooter, whatever. They won't call them terrorists. And when you use the same tactics as ISIS against people that you disagree with, I don't know what else to call it.
It is terrorism. Yeah, bottom line,
100%.
Yeah, and you know, you're right. You're right. They won't call it. Well, some won't. But hey, that's. I'm not too worried about the semantics right now. I mean, this is still unfolding, and you know, I would rather not make it a right left issue, except for the fact that A, it's called Unite the Right, and B, you have actual on the record white supremacists in the White House.
Correct.
And you've had a president who's been either slow to disavow or refusing to disavow the white supremacist elements that elevated him to the presidency. You can criticize me for that or say I'm out of line, but let's watch his speech today. Unless he says, I disavow and condemn this act of white nationalist terrorism.
I stand with all the people in this country. And I'm reevaluating
the people who work in my administration. If they hold views that are sympathetic to this, then it's not enough.
No.
Bottom line.
Correct.
And I can guarantee you he's not going to do that.
No, of course not. The only people that love him, and that's all he cares about, let's remember, are the people who voted for him out of racism, right? We want to build a wall because we hate brown people, mm-hmm. and black lives don't matter because police matter, and there's violent thugs and, you know, black on white crime and all of the things he said. The people that still support him, regardless of whether we're going to have a nuclear war, which we'll talk about later, the people that still support him are the people that supported him and will continue to support him as long as he upholds this white supremacist narrative.
Now, let me be clear about something, okay? Let's be fair. I'm not claiming that Donald Trump drove the car into the crowd of people. I'm not claiming that the Republican Party, the GOP, on a local or a national level, organized this.
Wants this. Condones this.
But now, because they are aligning themselves with conservatism or the right, they have a duty and an obligation to speak out against this in no uncertain terms, say it does not represent their ideals, and they condemn white nationalist racism and terrorism.
Yes.
And that's not hard to do. I mean, I guess it used to be.
It didn't fucking used to be. It used to be a thing that you could very easily do.
Yeah.
And then
George W. Bush and his father had no problem speaking out against it, even though at times they might have given wings to it, but when it came down to
brass tacks, they said, like, of course,
no, this is nothing to do with us.
Of course, this is not how we view America. Of course, this is not who we are. This is not our value system.
Yes,
and
unequivocally,
of course. And the sort of endlessly traumatizing and ever ending problem with the Trump administration is that they really have no will to do that.
Well, the Republican Party in general, right?
Yes.
Like I said, I was going crazy on Twitter right before
the car crash.
The guy who's a spokesman for the Republican Party in Virginia, I don't know exactly what his name is, but he went on MSNBC, and I forget who was interviewing, but they did a terrible job. It might have been Alex Witt, but I'm not sure, so I don't want to throw her under the bus. But would just give a very, very grossly partisan, half-assed response to this. Well, we condemn violence of all kinds, and, you know, let's not say that it's any one person's fault. And let me remind you that at the congressional baseball field, someone who was a progressive left-winger shot a bunch of congresspeople, and it was
fuck off.
Yeah, it was horrifying. I mean,
there is not a group of hundreds of left-wing people shooting congressmen. There is currently a group of hundreds of white supremacists chanting, "You will not replace us, Jew will not replace us," and a car driving into anti-racist protesters right now. But that's what's happening.
That's not even the point, though, right? The point is, like, you are framing your talking point with, now's not the time to be partisan, and now let me be completely partisan. It's very simple. Like, you say the Republican Party of Virginia and me myself completely condemn white nationalist racism. You don't even have to bring party into this.
Yeah.
And he was the one that chose to do that. And a lot of other Republicans were doing that this morning, and now they look pretty fucking bad. And, you know,
they looked bad then.
They looked bad then, but yeah, there's a really easy way to not make this partisan, is to say we condemn racism and these people do not stand with our movement or our party or our beliefs in any way, shape, or form. That's not hard to do. I guess it is hard for them to do because it might cost them votes. So that is very telling about them and what the core of the modern Republican Party is.
That's correct.
I'm not saying it. They're saying it.
Right.
When they refuse to condemn and call this what it is, they are telegraphing the fact that they do not want to alienate a large part of their base.
Yep.
And you can say I'm out of line. You could say I'm wrong. You could say I'm partisan. But watch and listen very carefully to what every Republican in the world is going to say about this today and over the next few days. Just watch.
Yeah.
And tell me I'm wrong. Because
right. I would love it if I were wrong.
I would love it if
they would come out and say, this is racist and gross and does not represent our party or our party or our country or our movement. This is not who we are. This is a perversion.
We want them to say this.
I want them to come out and fucking say this is a perversion of everything that we believe in. And of course we aren't white supremacists. And of course this is not what our country is. And this is
and of course we're not sympathetic to this.
What we are. I want someone to say that from that side.
I don't want to say that Trump and the Republicans rely on white supremacy to try to win votes on my side. I would much rather this was a fringe element that neither of the two parties wanted anything to do with.
Like it was forever.
Well,
I mean, not forever. Like it was for the last.
Like it's been in fits and starts. I think people of color would argue that neither party has done well enough.
Of course, it's not obviously right, of course. Forever. I mean,
right.
I mean, like in maybe the last 20 years, it kind of became uncool to be racist. But
once again, and I'm going to drone on this one more time. If you want to call me partisan, fine. Just pay attention to what Republican elected officials and Republican spokespeople and people that call themselves conservative pundits say about what's going on over the next several days and today. Just pay attention and make the judgment for yourself.
Unless they roundly say what you said, then I don't know what else to
say. And I'm not saying they need to disavow Trump necessarily. I'm not saying they need to disavow their party. I'm not saying...
They don't need to disavow their party. They need to define what their party is.
Yes,
and is that party a party of this, or is it a party of something else? And if they don't say that they're against, not just not for it, fucking against it. This is bad and wrong and awful and terrible and not who we are and not what we want.
And here's the problem, right? Some of my conservative friends or people I know would say, well, that's not fair.
What?
You know, why should we... hold on. They would come out and say, why should... No, of course they don't... No, we should not have to defend that. That's not our job. That how dare you align with that? And I would say, A, Sebastian Gorka, Stephen Miller, Steve Bannon. And then I would say, B, you have, over the last days and weeks and months, multiple numerous Republican politicians, mostly in the South, defending the Confederate statues and the Confederate flag and showing sympathy for these things. And then see, I would say this movement is calling themselves Unite the Right.
Yep.
So yes, you do have an obligation and you do have a duty and you must unequivocally state and separate conservatism and the Republican Party from this. Yes, you do.
And if you don't, then you own it.
Period.
You own it. It's yours. This is your party now.
And we haven't even gotten into the Stein people that helped pave the runway for this, but maybe down the line somewhere. Anyway, Cheeto fat ass golfer speaking now. Not going to listen. I'll get
the
Cliff's Notes.
He's going to talk about the veterans bill, apparently. Like, he literally, I don't know. I don't.
He'll say something, what I'm betting is... Oh, was that it? Okay, Trump just literally spoke for about 10 seconds and left the podium.
We weren't listening. We were just watching, and now he's shaking hands, and he's leaving.
And I don't know. Oh, my God. If that's what he just did, that is horrifying. That is way worse than what I expected. Well, let's see if he... Hold on, he's going back.
Oh,
okay. I literally thought...
Sorry, we shouldn't be doing this. This is very boring radio.
Well, that's what we just saw, right? He literally spoke for 10 seconds and walked off the podium, and I thought he was done. God almighty.
This is nothing surprising.
Okay, well, he came back to the podium, and...
We're not going to do this. All right, so anyway, with heavy hearts and lots of tears today, we covered Charlottesville, and I...
we'll probably get back to it within the next 90 minutes.
Yeah.
60 minutes.
Yeah. I hope that... I don't know. I really just... yeah. It's been hard. And I... Can I say something really quick about identity politics?
Yeah, and I'll get to a speech that Elizabeth Warren made earlier at Netroots Nation today, which is happening in Atlanta.
When Bernie Sanders and his people come out and say, we don't need to talk about race anymore. Race isn't a factor, because really what it's about is economic equality. And once we fix that, it'll fix everything else. Today is a day that I would like to punch him in the fucking face and all of his supporters and say, when you say talking about identity politics takes away from the issue of economic equality, you are saying something that's incredibly fucking privileged, and you don't understand people of color and women and minorities and what their lives look like. And if you think that if you fix the economic system in this country, you're going to fix racism or sexism or homophobia, you are terribly mistaken. These things are institutional and structural, and they are not going to be fixed without talking about them. And imagining a world in which we don't have to talk about them in order to make white people happy or vote for us isn't a world that's reality. And I'm tired of it, and I, you know, we talk about this every week about the Bernie people and the Trump people, and the Bernie people are who we rail against the most because they are most closely aligned with our values.
Some of them.
But you cannot possibly watch what's happened today and think that we don't have to talk about race in this country. You can't. You just can't. And doing so only hurts people of color and only hurts the progressive movement and is blind and stupid, and I'm tired of it. And that's all I have to say about that.
So as I predicted, it looks like Trump is giving some horseshit, milquetoast, both sides speech, which is exactly what I expected. Not much to say about that. The cry on, say, violence on all sides has been happening. We must come together. So no ownership, no responsibility, no speaking out against...
I don't even need him to
face.
Take ownership of it. I need him to say it's bad. That's it.
No, he's just giving...
I don't need him to take ownership. I need him to say white supremacy is bad.
He's not going
to
say that.
No.
And it doesn't look like he is. I could be wrong. Maybe they just didn't include that, but it looks like what he's saying is all violence is bad. And...
Let's not comment on what we don't know.
Okay, fair enough.
Anyway.
I would have thought, though, if he said... I disavow and condemn racism and white supremacy, that they would mention that.
Yeah. You would violence think. On many sides has been going on for a long time in our country.
Yeah, great. Great.
Quote.
Both sides. So Rostad had to like that, I guess.
Yeah.
In any event, we have a couple minutes. Well, we actually have quite a bit before the break. What should we pivot to now, if we can pivot to anything? How about Taylor Swift?
All right, that'll put me in a better mood.
So Taylor Swift was in town at the federal...
In our town, in Denver.
Well, she was right around the corner from me.
Yes.
At the federal courthouse.
Yes, she was.
And you might think that, who cares? Why would these people be talking about Taylor
why
Swift?
Why is Travis and Rach talking about Taylor Swift? Oh, let me tell you why.
Yeah.
Let me tell you all the things.
Very interesting.
All right, I want to pull up some quotes, so tell the backstory.
Okay, so I think it was 5 years ago or so, 4 or 5 years
three.
Ago.
Three.
It was only 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Taylor Swift was in town for a tour. I guess she was playing at the Pepsi Center, I think.
Uh-huh.
And she, you know, when you go to town, you do promos with the local radio DJ people. That's,
yeah,
whatever.
That's how it works.
So she was posing for a picture with an old white guy DJ for some radio station here. I don't even know.
Like KBDO or something.
I don't
maybe
listen
I'm
to
wrong.
Top
no,
40 pop music, so I have no idea.
Who listens to radio that's not NPR?
Right.
Sorry, everyone.
Not us hipsters.
No.
Anyway, so she was meeting with some creepy old DJ and his girlfriend who were reportedly drunk. And
maybe, who cares? That's not, don't even.
Well, I know, but that's just part of it. According to Taylor Swift and her bodyguard and some witnesses, he basically grabbed her ass.
No, he didn't basically. He literally stuck his hand up the back of her
skirt
and put his hand on her bare ass and latched onto it and had it there for quite a few
seconds. While they were snapping a few pictures.
Correct.
Now, she didn't freak out or turn around and slap him or anything, but she said to everybody, like, as soon as it was over, like, she got the hell out of the room, and then she was like, did you fucking see that? This guy just grabbed my ass. What the fuck?
Right. Her bodyguards escorted him out. They reported it to the news station. He got fired.
Well, yeah. Yeah, they reported it to the station he works for.
Yes.
Yeah, her people was like, you know, your DJ grabbed Taylor's ass, and he got fired. Then he turned around and sued her for defamation of character. And I forgot, what was the amount, like $50 million or?
No, he wanted, I want to say $2 million.
Oh, really?
Million.
I thought it was more than that. I thought it was like 10, at least 10.
No.
Anyway, he lost his job, and then he sued Taylor Swift, saying she made it all up.
Yes, defamation of character. She made it all up. She's a horrible person.
Right.
So she countersued. She didn't report this to the police at the time because we'll get into why that is, because she's a woman in America. No matter how famous you are, no matter what, who you are, well, you don't report shit like that because it happens fucking all the time.
Yes, yes.
So he sues her, which is laughable. She countersues for $1.
Right.
And accuses him of assault, which is what happened. There's a picture as well, which we should talk about that picture. But so they had a trial. This has been going on for 3 years, and they had a trial in Denver.
Just the last couple days.
And I don't know, or don't really, I guess, care how you feel about Taylor Swift, but Jesus Christ, she was amazing.
In the trial, you mean?
Yes. Yeah. She testified about her experience, and she was just amazing. There's been a lot of talk among women that I know and women that are online about why is this happening? And it's just an ass grab from 3 years ago. And I disagree. I feel like I'm very, regardless of how you feel about Taylor Swift's music or whatever, and sometimes I think it's fun, not my normal thing. I think what she's doing, and I think this was borne out in her testimony, was saying, you know, I have the power, privilege, and money to see this thing through. And I'm going to stand up for the women that this happens to literally every day. And it happens all the time. This has been the frustrating thing for me. There's been a lot of talk about, well, did it really happen? I don't really trust her, and I don't really like her. And
I've gotten that from women, some women I've actually talked to, which I was very taken aback by.
Yes.
And it's I still don't quite get it.
I think that as women, we've been so normalized to the idea that this shit happens all the time. Like, the number of times men have grabbed me inappropriately in a public place and pretended like it was nothing, and I didn't do anything is countless.
Mm.
And I don't know any woman who has not had this happen to them. And we just sort of brush it off as a thing that happens to women. It's a thing that you just endure because you're a woman.
Right.
It's a thing you just put up with. It's a thing that's part of your life. And we fucking shouldn't. It shouldn't be a part of our lives. It should not be a thing that we have to endure. Some asshole that you're standing next to at a bar. This has happened to me so many times. I can't even tell you. Ass, tits, just I just brushed by and I happened to grab your tit full force and squeeze your nipple. But really, it's crowded in here. Or, you know, oh, my hand went up your skirt. Oh my God, sorry. And it just happens. And we just sort of go, God, it sucks. And we fucking shouldn't.
No.
That's assault. That's assault. When someone grabs your body non-consensually, that's not okay. If this happened to men, if a man came up to you and just like grabbed your dick and was like, oh, sorry.
Your average guy would take a swing at him.
Yeah.
And be justified according to probably society and law enforcement and everybody else.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people have said, well, why didn't she say something? Why didn't she yell at him? Why didn't she hit him? Why didn't she? Because women are not socialized to do that. I'm standing in a bar and a guy puts his hand up my skirt and grabs my ass and then is like, ha ha, oh, sorry. I have two choices in that situation. Well, I've got three. I can do nothing or, you know, sort of laugh it off and go, God, ugh, don't.
That guy's gross, yeah.
That guy's gross, and then go tell your friends and be traumatized for a little bit about it.
Mm-hmm.
Two, I can take a swing at him. I could punch him, for sure. And three, I can yell and scream in his face and tell him he's an awful person and, you know, whatever.
Make a big scene at the bar.
Two and three are escalating the situation. Mm-hmm. I don't know how the situation is going to end. And what I'm afraid of in situations two and three is that that situation escalates into violence against me.
Right.
If I say something to him, if I bring it up, if I insult him, if I say, please don't do that, like, get the fuck away from me, what are you doing? That situation can escalate very quickly into violence. And I'm not a big, strong person that can particularly defend myself against a lot of men. It's just the way it is. And yeah. I don't want to get into a violent altercation with an angry man who feels that he has entitlement over my body. He's already proven to me that he does not see me as human.
And doesn't respect any boundaries.
Right. So there's no reason for me to believe that if I said to him, that's really inappropriate and that really upsets me and you're an awful person, please don't ever do that, and you're awful. That you'd
necessarily be safe.
That he's going to go, oh my God, I'm sorry, you're right. My whole worldview has changed. Like, he has already proven to me that he does not see me as human. So right. Everything after that moment is me just trying to escape from that person. And talking to law enforcement, I can tell you, like, what are you going to do? That guy grabbed my ass. Oh.
Well, here's the thing.
What are you gonna, like, they don't care. They're not gonna, there's nothing to do. So what is so great about what Taylor Swift did is she countersued him for $1 so that she could go to court and she could fucking tell her story, and she doesn't give a fuck if she loses $3 million. Who cares? She cares because she has a lot of young female fans.
Tweens especially.
Yes.
So that's what's really important, right? Girls that are 10, 11, 12, they are just learning about the world.
They're just learning to be objectified.
Yes.
They're just learning to...
They're having their first experiences with men and boys.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, their bodies and learning what ownership and agency of their own body and their own choices even mean.
Yeah.
And it's really formative, important years.
Yep.
And so you're absolutely right. And that's the part that really bugged me with the... I'm not going to name names, but the one or two women I talked to were like, well, I don't know, whatever. I don't really like Taylor Swift. I'm not even sure. It's like, whoa, back up.
Yeah.
Back up, back way the fuck up. And think about this for a second, right? Because here's two misnomers. A, that Taylor Swift didn't do anything. Well, she did. She, as this moment that she was out of the room with the creep that she wanted to get the fuck away from, she said, did you see what that just happened? That creep just grabbed my ass.
And
what
this
the fuck?
Photographer said, no, I have a picture of it. I have it on file. I saw what just happened.
So
she
that's
was
not,
like, holy shit.
That's not doing nothing.
No. And then her fucking security crew escorted him the fuck out of the facility immediately. And her staff called the radio station and told them what happened.
So in my mind, she did everything absolutely right.
Yes.
Okay. So now, secondly, what she's doing here, obviously she's not trying to get money from the guy, because that's always, they're just trying to get money.
Has more money than God.
Yeah, she doesn't need this DJ's money.
Somebody else
money.
Said, like, she just wants attention. And I'm like, yes, Taylor Swift is very much lacking attention. That must be the reason
she doesn't have enough exposure.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Right. And so she is sending a very clear message to her little tween girls that this is not okay.
And you know what?
Men and boys do not have a right.
That's right.
To touch you in any way without your permission. Period.
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 Period. And she was so unequivocal about it. Mm-hmm. And you know what? She's not just talking to little girls too. She is saying to every woman that this has ever happened to, she is speaking for us and saying, no, it's not okay. It's not okay. And I'm going to go to Denver and I'm going to sit in a courtroom for 3 fucking days.
When we had really shitty weather.
And really shitty weather. And I'm going to sit there and I'm going to be harassed by this fucking lawyer who's going to try to make it seem like it's my fault or it wasn't a big deal.
Oh, she pants that lawyer.
Oh my God. And I'm going to do it because I'm going to tell little girls it's not okay. I'm going to tell women it's happened to it's not okay. I'm going to tell the world it's not fucking okay. It's not okay. So this lawyer, he says to her, I don't remember all the exact quotes, but my two favorites were, he was saying, well, if you were, what, did you blame your bodyguard? Like, why wasn't he?
Yeah, why didn't he jump in and tackle the guy?
And she's like, no, I blame your client for sticking his hand up my skirt and grabbing my ass. And then
she used the word ass, which is great.
Ass multiple times. Bare ass grab. Like, she was just like, this is what happened. I loved that. And then he's like, well, why wasn't, like, I'm looking at this picture and why wasn't the front of your skirt ruffled? And she was like, because my ass is in the back of my body.
Good point.
I mean, she was just completely unequivocal. And he's like, he said something about, his client's career being destroyed. And she said, like,
not my problem.
She said, your client has made choices that are his own,
mm-hmm.
and it will have led to his own demise. I will not allow you to blame me mm-hmm. for his fate.
Yes.
Like, I will not allow you to
those
make this
words.
My fault.
It was great.
He did what he did, and it is not my fault. And, like, she didn't say that just because she was mad at the attorney. She said that to every woman everywhere that said, maybe I shouldn't say something. And
maybe I shouldn't address like that.
Brock Turner, yeah. we're going to ruin his little life, even though he raped that girl, but yeah. he has such a promising career.
Yeah, don't ruin his swimming career over this.
I will not allow you to make this my fault.
Yes.
Nothing about this is my fault.
Nope.
I blame your client for doing something he shouldn't have done. Period. And that is a message for all women, no matter your age, no matter your experience with this, for all women. I will not allow you to make this my fault, and it's not okay.
Bravo.
So
again, we could give a rat's ass about Taylor Swift's music. I couldn't name two Taylor Swift songs.
Shake It Off is kind of fun, and I like the Ryan Adams.
Yeah, but the point
cover,
is,
but it doesn't matter.
This is not about her as an artist or a
no.
musician. This is about her as a woman with agency over her body. And she
had the power and privilege and money to do this, and she did it. And
yes.
I'm very grateful to her and proud of her, and I fucking love her for it. Mad fucking props, Taylor Swift.
So to just today, I mean, this is not clearly relevant in the other news of the world, but a judge threw out this asshole's lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know about the countersuit. I guess that's next. Or maybe it's later. I don't know. I don't know if they do it. I don't know if it's like Judge Judy or they do it immediately. But
she asked for a dollar. What she wanted was her day in court.
Yeah.
And she wanted to say to him, you know,
well, it's not over. The only part that's over is his suit.
Right. Which, you know, is not inconsiderable. That was the biggest hurdle for her, was
right.
did she ruin this man's career? And the judge said that there was no evidence that she intentionally tried to do something.
Of course not.
That would hurt his career other than reporting what he did to his boss. If I reported to my boss that one of his employees grabbed my ass and held onto it during a photo shoot and then showed him a picture, best bet that person be fired. That's
yeah.
not my fault he got fired. That's the fault of the person who fucking grabbed my ass. So her reporting the behavior of one of their employees to that news station, not to mention, you know, this is a person who meets a lot of celebrities. If I'm the news boss and I'm like, I send you out to meet music people and you grab their asses, you're definitely fucking fired.
Mm-hmm.
You're definitely fired if you grab Taylor Swift's ass.
Anybody's ass, it should be.
Yeah.
Like if you grab the secretary's ass, you know.
The person who delivers the mail. The
promo girl at your, you know, remote radio station thing at the car dealership. Like, that should be fireable for anybody.
Don't assault people.
It's that
simple. You get fired for that. You definitely do. And reporting that someone did it to you doesn't make you ruin their career. They ruined their career by doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. So. That put me in a better mood. I really, like, if you haven't read the testimony, go read it.
It's really
fucking
great.
Amazing. She's just
on
clearly
point.
Prepped and, like, very much fiery and feisty and lovely.
And succinct and direct.
And some news agencies reported, like, she was snarky and she was bitchy and
yeah,
she and then the internet just like melted down over them and they like a couple of them retracted their statements and shit because it was like no.
But that's what they're used to, right? And I was actually a little worried about that.
You and I were talking about
that. That a jury might be like, oh, well, she came across as bitchy and, you know.
Yeah. Well, she seemed aggressive. She was aggressive and she was bitchy. There was literally a woman online that was like, well, why weren't you wearing underwear?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, good. So if I don't wear underwear, everyone gets to just grab chunks of my ass. That's the rule? If I don't wear a burqa, you get to slap my face? What? Like, no.
Mm-hmm.
What you wear is not determinant of your agency and value.
Nope, absolutely not.
Yeah.
So the Trump speech is over. Didn't last very long.
We must love and respect each other.
Yeah, I didn't see the whole thing, but it was a couple of milquetoast comments about, you know, kumbaya and both sides, blah, blah, before talking about his veterans bill. And that's exactly what I expected. So it was useless. It was meaningless.
It was absolutely.
It was weak-kneed.
Both sides are violent and hateful, and we are divisive, and we should love and respect each other.
So
not
I don't know how I'm supposed to love and respect
white nationalism. I'm not going to do that ever, by the way.
No.
I will never love or respect a white nationalist, a white supremacist, a racist. I won't. That's not a thing I'm capable of.
Right. And, you know, if you look, dig a little deeper into that, again, I brought this up in the early part. For Trump to say that, what he's essentially saying is, well, these people have deserve their safe space, and you know, their voice needs to be heard too, is what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you take it to its logical end, right?
Look,
if you say anything other than I condemn racism and white supremacy and what these people represent, then you're condoning it.
Yes, I agree.
You can disagree with me if you want, but if you think about it logically, to get up there and say, we all need to get along and I condemn all violence of all types, you know, what you're saying is that, I mean, I guess you can make a First Amendment argument, no, but that's not what he was doing.
That's the job of the fucking ACLU.
Right.
The ACLU should defend the KKK protesters, the literal fucking Nazis that are standing on this street. They should defend their right to be standing there. That's the fucking job of the ACLU. The job of the president of the United States is to come out and say, I'm the president of everyone, and I condone racism, I condone white supremacy, and I do not align myself with these people.
Just to drive this point home, I'm watching video right now of the Nazi people versus the anti-Nazis, and I saw a couple Trump shirts in the Nazi crowd.
Yep.
So that, I mean, that's a problem. That's something that
MAGA hats. Like, that's, we something just saw that
Donald,
MAGA hat,
Donald
right?
Trump has to acknowledge.
I would recommend you take a good look in the mirror and remember it was white Americans who put you in the presidency, not radical leftists.
Says David Duke. And I retweeted
to
that.
Donald Trump. As a response to his, we all must be united and condemn all that hate stands for. There is no place for this kind of violence in America. Let's come together as one.
Yeah.
Now, we must all be united and condemn all that hate stands for is not saying which one is hate.
Right.
He's not saying.
No, he's trying to throw a blanket statement on everybody in Charlottesville.
I would recommend that you remember that white people put you in presidency.
And he's right.
He's fucking right.
So apparently, unfortunately, in this chaos, and I don't know if this is due to the car or whatever, but someone has died.
Oh.
There is one confirmed death, according to MSNBC. And again, it's not clear whether that is related to the car that drove into the crowd of people or the other violence that's taken place. But 19 injured and one dead, and I expect those numbers to rise.
Can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
As a Jew?
Well, you can't ask it as a Jew because I'm the Jew.
I'm asking you a question because you're a Jew.
Okay.
There's a lot of anti-Semitism being thrown around. A lot of it. Most of this KKK shit has been around black people and people of color. And it's been interesting for me as a, what do you call it? I don't know. Not a Jew.
A boy? A shiksa goddess?
A shiksa.
As my dad would say.
You're a shiksa goddess. Yes. It's adorable. I'm not as sensitive to anti-Semitism as I am to racism.
Okay.
And I have been.
I've got a lot
to say about this. Last couple of years, having known you. But I still, it sort of shocks me every time someone says something like that because it seems so fucking outdated and so just like, wait, what?
You know who it doesn't shock?
Jews.
Yeah. I'll give you a couple things. I'll try to put it in a nutshell before the break. But here's the thing. Okay. As Jews, we know anti-Semitism never went away, and we know that anti-Semitism was very much condoned with the right and the conservative movement for many, many, many years, and it never really went anywhere. Where the lines kind of got blurred over the last 20, 30 years was the right and the Christian evangelical right's real strong support for Israel.
Right, which is confusing for me.
Well, I'll explain it.
Okay.
The right and the evangelical hard right have become very enamored with Israel because A, they're a buffer to Palestine and the Arab world.
Right. And, which we hate Muslims, so that makes sense.
Right.
Okay.
And B, they have this Book of Revelations, Armageddon view of Jerusalem being the center of the rapture or where it starts and blah, blah, blah.
Is it also because I'm just quickly, so I can clarify. Israel seems to be sort of aligned with the right in terms of like a lot of other like social issues and things like social, economic and military issues.
Just military. Yeah. Okay. I mean, there are some crazy, devout, you know, backwards religious people in Israel like everywhere else. But for the most part, that's not the way it is.
In Israel?
Yeah. Okay. But you have, obviously, there's a lot of neocon.
Yeah. Okay.
So what you had, especially, you know, in the George W. Bush years and with the new neocon movement, was this very strong support in the Republican Party for Israel and from the Christian evangelical right. So people kind of said, oh, I guess they're over the anti-Semitism thing now because of their love for Israel.
Yeah.
No, absolutely not. And in fact, that's the another ironic thing, right? And you spoke about this before, how we went for years and years and all this crazy neo-Nazism was sort of pushed way down outside to the bottom.
Right.
And it was very fringy and maybe they voted, but everybody was like,
that's bad.
Right.
That's not okay. You're not allowed to say that.
They didn't have the same kind of safe space as they do now. But if you knew what to look for and you did find these occasional pop-up stuff, like they were still as anti-Semitic as ever. And like, why are we supporting Israel? And this is a Zionist whatever. And it's all corrupt. And George W. Bush is just part of the Zionist whatever.
Right.
And then that seeped through and got a more sort of mainstream bent to it when we started calling it the alt-right. I don't know, the Pepe the Frog meme. And, oh, it's not racist. It's just this new thing called the alt-right. So that it never went away. It just found a safe space to come out.
Okay.
So
it's the same sort of thing as we're looking at now.
Like when nice white hipsters cry or get very upset, oh my God, all this racism against black people is, where did it come from? And black people are like, what are you talking about?
What are you
about?
Fucking talking about? It's always been there. A part of my life every single day.
As a Jew, I say the same thing. It's like, it's not.
Well, I remember when we were watching the debates. Remember the Republican primary?
Unfortunately.
And was it Ted Cruz who was like New York values?
Yes.
Yes. And you,
my dad heard that dog whistle.
I was like, oh my God, he's talking about Jews. And then your dad literally texted you and he was like, guess Ted Cruz hates Jews. Or like, yeah,
Cruz hates the Jews.
And I was like, oh my God, I got it.
And Trump was smart and saw an opening and kind of hit him for that. But, it was more than just Jews. You know, that means like the gays, the Jews, brown people, Indian people.
No, but he was talking about money.
Yeah.
And he was talking about, money, influence, and something else. And then he said something about New York values.
Yeah.
And it was like very much like anti-Semitism dog whistle.
Right.
I mean, if you talk about San Francisco values, that's like women are people and gays shouldn't be
Which
dead.
Is really funny because his wife works for Goldman Sachs.
But she's not Jewish. Anyway, I think
it's his wife. Somebody close to him works for Goldman Sachs.
Well, that's interesting. I just, it's always shocking to me when I hear people say out loud, like, Jews will not replace. I'm like, where did you come from? What fucking century are you living
in? They've always been there. It's like now they have their safe space.
Now they have their space.
To run amok. And
I feel bad that I'm shocked by it.
Well, what I'm most disgusted by is I have some Jewish friends who are, quote, conservative because Israel, 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 Israel. And they're kind of silent on this.
Mm.
They've just aligned themselves with the Republican Party and the conservative movement, and they just refuse to acknowledge this.
And when
they
watch this today, what happens?
They don't talk to me about it.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We'll talk more about this. We also have to talk about other world events, North Korea, Venezuela, all kinds of other crap. And a case of voter fraud in Denver that might surprise you.
Yes.
So don't go anywhere.
Case of voter fraud.
We'll be right back. Irreverent Testimony. On this day, we are keeping an eye on events in Charlottesville, Virginia, where it is, I don't know if it's confirmed, but the reporting is there is at least one dead, 19 injured in Charlottesville, Virginia. Not clear if it's related to the car that plowed into a group of anti-racist protesters, but that seems to be the case. So
by the time you hear this, I think we're going to post it soon.
It'll air on Netroots tonight.
It'll air on Netroots tonight as well. So in response to this, in our community, if anybody's out there in Denver and in Colorado, there is an anti-racist peaceful protest that's going to be held tomorrow in Denver at the MLK statue at City Park by East High School at 2 p.m. A peaceful gathering to show unity, strength, and power proactively against racism, hatred, and white supremacy, and in solidarity with everyone resisting oppression everywhere. A walk to the Capitol, Capitol building, will follow, and there's no other planned event or agenda. So if you're not in Denver, I'm guessing a lot of communities around the country are
doing this. Yeah, I think there's one organizing in New York on Trump Tower. I bet there's a lot happening tomorrow.
Yeah. So, we will not be there, unfortunately.
We're working on some local politics.
Yes. Yes.
As of course we urge you all to do
yes,
all the time.
I urge you to do it, and it's exhausting.
We're working on a city council campaign that we might give you more information about as it goes on here.
Yes. Yes. Post August 21st. Get involved in local politics. It's rewarding and exhausting, and it makes a big impact. So we won't be able to go, but I would encourage anyone who has time tomorrow and just look around. Given what's happened today, I can't imagine that there's not going to be something in your community that you can go to and show your solidarity for people of color and anti-white supremacism.
Okay, so to recap, I saw the Cliff Notes of Donald Trump's words that he just spoke a few minutes ago regarding the violence in Charlottesville, and it was exactly what I expected. It was, we condemn violence on both sides.
Yep.
I guess equating Nazis and anti-Nazis.
I mean, really, that's the craziest part, right? Like, both sides are doing this, so they're equal. People who hate racism and people who are racist.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, and this is that's what he said. So I what is happening here is a bunch of racists went and took over the town of Charlottesville, and then a bunch of anti-racists came out to say, fuck
people
you, racists.
People who said, fuck you, racism is bad, and then
somebody plowed a car into a group of the anti-racists.
And sprayed a bunch of mace on them.
And the president came out and said, boy, we condemn this bad stuff on all sides.
All sides
both
are
sides.
Bad, and we should be so more that, together.
That's what he said. Again, people are going to say, stop being so partisan. I'm telling you what the president just said, which is exactly what I predicted, basically, he would say.
Yep.
He did say, some people are lauding the fact that he said, this is not a Donald Trump problem or an Obama problem. This has been going on before both of us.
That's racism is a structural and institutional problem that's been affecting our country since its very birth.
And you know what?
Birth.
That would have been a good start if he were to go on and say, racism is bad and white nationalism is bad, but he didn't say that. So his words were meaningless, and they were counterproductive, as I expected. And, I mean, he didn't even write them anyway. It was banned and penned, I'm sure. But, so that's where we are. So if you expected the president to have a presidential moment and express some sort of leadership, then no, you
literally
didn't get
that. Literally, racism is bad is
not
a thing that he can say out loud.
So, I'm not surprised. Maybe you're surprised. I sure am not.
I don't think anyone's surprised.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say about Trump's reaction to this.
Yeah.
And of course, Sebastian Gorka and Stephen Miller and
Steve Bannon,
three avowed basically white supremacists, are still gainfully employed in the White House.
Correct.
So
Gorka has not obtained security clearance for very good reasons.
What is he
doing
there?
He's an advisor.
And why is everybody keep sticking microphones in his face? Because they know that'll get
juicy
ratings.
Juicy things that are racist that he'll say. Which, you know, can I just rail for a minute about that?
Yes.
You know, I understand that ratings are important and there's a lot of juicy shit coming out of a lot of places. But when you stick a microphone as a major news organization into the face of a white supremacist who holds a place in the White House, what you're doing is you are normalizing racism, and you're saying you are complicit in the administration's hiring and listening to racists by saying this person has legitimacy. This person is in the White House, and we think that that's okay, and we're going to listen to what he has to say. I don't think that's okay. I think you should say, I'm not going to talk to fucking Gorka because he's a fucking racist neo-Nazi. And the fact that the administration has him on the payroll is a news story in and of itself, but I'm not going to allow him to have a mouthpiece on my news organization because I'm not going to legitimize his presence in the White House and I'm not going to normalize his opinions about race.
And why is Gorka still there? I mean, it was shown, several things have been shown with this guy, that he basically made up his doctorate. That is bullshit.
Yes.
And that it does have direct connections to an actual neo-Nazi organization in Hungary. Mm-hmm. I mean, why does this guy still have a job? Why hasn't he been forced out? Forced him out?
Why would he be? He represents the Trump brand.
He's toxic.
Yeah. So is the president. It's not like he's in the Obama administration. It's the Trump administration. So he fits in perfectly. He may never get security clearance, but he can have the fucking ear of the president without it.
That's great.
Yeah. Everything is fucked. Like, but
where's the leadership from congressional Republicans to say, I don't want this guy in the White House with the president's ear?
Well, those are co-equal branches of government. They have no say.
They can talk.
They can talk, though. They sure fucking can. They can say,
they can get in front of a mic and say, this guy shouldn't be in the White House.
They can say what you just said. Why is this person in the White House? Why does this person have the ear of the president? Why does this person who doesn't have security clearance and is a literal neo-Nazi have a place in the executive branch? They can't make him go away, but they can say with their measurable power and authority and clout, this is wrong. This is not good.
Well, on that note, let's step back from this, if we can, for a second.
Yeah.
And talk about the Trump v. McConnell Twitter wars of this past week.
You're going to have to take the lead because I know that Trump is just shitting all over Mitch McConnell, but I don't have a lot of details other than that.
Yeah, he's essentially doing to McConnell what he did to Sessions a few weeks ago, which was basically a couple weeks ago when the repeal crashed and burned dramatically and John McCain gave the deciding vote. McConnell basically said, okay, let's move on.
Yeah.
F it.
Tax reform, which was kind of what this was anyway, but yeah.
Yeah, and Trump at first was like, oh, no, well, we shouldn't give up on this. And then he basically lashed out and said, hey, McConnell wasn't able to do this. He sucks. Why? And he's basically saying most of this on Twitter.
All of it, right? Like, this is all like a Twitter thing. He's not like having a presser about.
No, he's also said it in some press gaggles. Shit on McConnell as well. He said, like, I don't get it. He had 7 years to do this. There's no excuse. Why couldn't he whip a couple more votes in line? He sucks at his job. And he's, I don't want to say he has a point.
I don't totally disagree with that. I don't totally disagree with that. I want to agree with Trump, but I would say if you've spent the last 7 years, this is Speaker Ryan and Mitch McConnell, shitting all over Obamacare.
Well, Ryan got it passed in the House. Ryan got it passed.
Fair. But he doesn't have a plan.
No.
Going forward.
Well, here's what Trump doesn't understand, right? Those were all show votes.
Yes.
Like every Republican congressperson could vote repeal knowing that it would never get past the president's desk. Obviously. And they didn't have enough votes to override a veto.
Right.
So, you know, it was just something to run on politics. And raise money on.
Yeah, absolutely. Raise money on. Absolutely.
And Trump really thought, oh, no, they were really trying to repeal it. They must have a plan. He's like, No.
They've proven they don't. Like, I'm with him. Like, I'm very frustrated by the Republican Party for many reasons, but one of which is, the least of which is not like, okay, you've been trying to repeal this for 7 years, and I'm happy that you were unable to do that, but what I'm frustrated by is in the last 7 years, as you've watched this unfold and you've been repealing it 69 times or whatever the fuck number it is, no one was an adult in the room and said, then what?
Well,
then what? What do we do then? What is better? Because it didn't fucking matter. It didn't matter.
Well, not only did it not matter, they didn't have a plan
anybody
would actually like. And when they had to cobble together a plan, it was just a bunch of right-wing Cato Institute shit that nobody wants. It's just take away your insurance and jack up the price of everything and have this a pre-Obamacare world where everything sucks.
Yeah.
So.
And everyone was like, no, don't do that. That sounds terrible.
Right. And then it became real to the voters.
Yes.
Because voters also knew that, you know, it wasn't actually going to get repealed. So that's what Trump either doesn't understand or pretends not to understand. But anyway, the point is now his ire is on McConnell, and he yes. hasn't let up.
No.
He's saying, bring repeal back, and the fact that you couldn't do it sucks, and maybe you should step down from your leadership role.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually been saying that. Now, a lot of pundits are hyperventilating over this, like, this is crazy, you don't go after... And of course, there's still
a, of your own party.
Yeah, well, especially when there's still a Senate investigation into collusion with the Russians.
He doesn't know anything.
And guess what? I don't think one Senate Republican is like, you know, Trump has a point. They're all like, leave Mitch alone, you idiot.
And Trump has absolutely, in the same way that the Congress has no control over who's in the White House has absolutely no say in who is the Senate or congressional leadership.
They can throw their weight behind candidates.
No, they can
like
talk.
They're doing in Alabama.
Just like you said, they can talk. But there's no possibility. The president has no measurable authority to say, kick Mitch, like, I'm firing Mitch McConnell. Like, he can't.
No, he's got clout. Nothing. If he had clout, which Trump is losing clout rapidly.
He can talk. He can just talk. Like Senate Republicans can talk and congressional Republicans
but
can
here,
talk.
But here's the bottom line, right? A couple weeks ago, Trump was ostensibly trying to force Sessions out via Twitter.
Who's trying to bully him, basically.
Right, and everybody was losing their minds, and all the punditry was like, well, Sessions has got to resign. He's lost the confidence of the president.
Nope.
And Sessions was like, nah, I'm good. And now it's... Does anybody still think Sessions is going to resign?
No.
I mean, that still might be a tactic in the roundabout method of trying to get rid of Robert Mueller. But as of right now, it doesn't look like Sessions is going anywhere.
That news story is to bed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems to be.
So it's same thing with McConnell. Is McConnell going to step down from his leadership post?
Why would
he?
No. He's not leading the executive branch. He's leading the legislative branch. And the legislative branch seems to think he's doing a pretty good job. His party, at least.
So what it actually comes down to is that the president just runs his mouth and it's meaningless.
Well, that's an interesting thing that I want to pivot to. That seems to be the case not only for the legislative branch and the judicial branch, but also the executive branch. So he's been making some big news about, well, that's just no more transgender people. And the military is like, yeah, we're not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying, well, we're going to do this. And like, he's making all these statements, and his own branch of government, because he's doing it in tweets, are ignoring him. They're just like, no.
Yeah, this
isn't
a thing.
Like, we're just not going to do that. Like, you can't just tweet something and we're going to do it. That's not how it works.
Right.
So they're just sort of ignoring him. They're sort of like castrating him, essentially, and saying, like, if this is your method of communication to us, we're ignoring it.
Right.
Because this is not the normal function of government. So unless you do something that is the normal function of government, we are ignoring your tweets.
And he literally thinks that he just tweets his will and his will be done.
And it doesn't work that way. And the executive branch is making that pretty fucking clear. From the, what was it? The, wasn't the EPA. It was another executive branch. He said some bullshit on Twitter and they were just like, yeah, we're not doing that.
Well,
like, we're not doing that.
Eventually,
like, we're just not.
We're going to have to get to the EPA too, because Pruitt is dismantling the EPA quietly and behind the scenes.
Yes.
And it's just completely overlooked and everything else that's going on. So we'll have to get that, which reminds me, there's almost so much stuff we have to get to. Do we want to get to that memo that was, I think, crushed by the White House?
Yes, I would like to talk about that very much.
Okay, go ahead.
So there was this scientific report that was commissioned that they do, I think it's like every 5 years or something. And it's a bunch of scientists and people of, you know, scholarly people. And they publish their climate change report, and they typically give it to the president. Mm-hmm. They leaked it.
Somebody
to the press
did.
Because they were afraid, because what the report says is pretty much unequivocally, climate change is real. It's human caused. It's all the things we already know. It's a big problem. And here's some of the things that are going to happen. And they were afraid that if they gave this report strictly to the White House, that the White House would redact it or bury it or not talk about it. And so they said, we're giving it to the White House and we're also giving it to the press,
mm-hmm.
so that everybody knows what sort of the score is here.
Yeah, this is the United States Federal Government Science Commission.
Correct.
This isn't eggheads at Princeton or Al Gore.
No, no, no. This is a commission that has been, commissioned by the federal government to study this thing, and they have completed that study and they released that study. Typically, they would release it to the White House, and the White House would then release it to the public and talk about their plan. But this commission was afraid that that would not happen, that this study would be buried, and because it goes really against what Scott Pruitt and the administration has said about climate change. The science is in, again, as though we needed more, and the science contradicts the administration's opinion about climate change.
Right.
And so they were like, it has to be made public, and we don't think Trump's going to do it, so we're just going to release it publicly and release it to the White House and see what happens. What a lot of the media I've been reading, Washington Post in particular, has been saying is this is sort of a time to pay attention and see what the administration does with this information, because
they're not going to do anything with it.
It's the federal government against the federal government, right?
Yeah.
And so does his departments, does his agencies, does his administration look at this report and say, oh, that's science and we should do something? Or do they try to discredit it?
Yeah, they'll just probably eliminate that department.
Do they ignore it? Do they eliminate that department?
Yeah.
I mean, they'll ignore it
and Pruitt will eliminate
Congress
that department.
Congress could defund them. I mean, there's a lot of things that could happen here. But the important thing to remember is that once again, science has proven unequivocally that this is happening and that it's a real serious threat to not just our country, but to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And how does an administration that doesn't want to believe that react?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a space to watch, I would say.
Moving on to geopolitics, tensions have been high between North Korea and the United States. North Korea has supposedly...
Yes, unless you live in a hole, you know this.
Yeah.
But we should talk about it.
...been able to miniaturize a nuclear warhead to where it could fit on an intercontinental ballistic missile, potentially...
ICBM
striking any of our allies in the region and potentially even the Western United States.
Correct.
Or Hawaii, at least.
Yeah.
Donald Trump has reacted, kind of trying to sound more like Kim Jong-un than Kim Jong-un,
mm-hmm.
and just with a lot of bluster and a lot of people thinking...
The fire and fury of the United States will rain upon you or some shit like
that. Yeah, yeah, just sounding like the North Korean press office.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we are, and then North Korea kind of threatened Guam and then sort of walked it back and said, well, we're going to do a test near Guam just to show you. And then
China was like, you're on your own if you attack the United States. Then
but
China
if
was
the United
like,
States
well,
attacks North Korea,
yeah, well, you're,
then,
we're neutral. And then Russia was like, we're all in for North Korea.
I don't exactly remember what Russia said, but China did say if North Korea attacks the United States, we're neutral. But if the United States attacks
North Korea... No, they said that
North
you're
Korea,
on your own. Yeah,
nope,
like, we're
no,
not.
Rachel, no, this is what they said. They said, if North Korea attacks the United States, we're neutral. If the United States attacks North Korea, we are backing North Korea and we will ally with them in war. That's what they said.
Well, that's new.
Yeah.
That's since yesterday then.
Yeah, and that's important.
Yeah.
That's a big, big distinction. I'm not sure what Russia said, but on the Russian side, we had Vladimir Putin expelling a lot of diplomats and diplomatic workers at the United States Embassy in Moscow. And Trump's reaction was, well, good, we were trying to cut our payroll anyway.
All right. I think now's the time for Professor Trav, with your international relations degree, to talk to us about two things. One.
This fucking president.
I know. One, why are diplomats important? Why is it important that not have happened and his reaction is so fucking stupid?
Okay. Even in the very, very heights of the Cold War, in the height of the Cuban Missile Crisis, we had a functioning United States embassy with United States diplomats and workers in Moscow, and Moscow had an active embassy in the middle of Washington, D.C.
With diplomats who worked there, yes.
Yes, and mm-hmm. that space is considered sovereign territory of the country it represents. That's how embassies work.
Okay.
Right?
So, like, in those terrorist movies when you're like, just get to the embassy. The reason that's important is because once you, as a U.S. citizen, you're in, like, some crazy country and you're, like, fleeing somebody.
Right.
You get to the embassy and you're safe. The
that's
reason
United
for
States
that
ground.
Is because it's the United States ground.
And
nobody
this,
can
is
fuck
why,
with you,
this is why
right?
a lot of people were very, very critical, and there's some debate over Jimmy Carter, when essentially the Ayatollah-backed militants stormed the
right.
United States Embassy and took a bunch of hostages because they essentially invaded American sovereign territory.
Yes.
And we didn't do a whole lot about it.
Right.
Other than try to put a lot of international pressure.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot that was done behind the scenes that Reagan took credit for that Jimmy Carter actually did. Probably. That allowed for... No, I'm telling you there is. We did a lot, an entire study about this when I was in college, about how Jimmy Carter essentially obtained the release of these people. And then he...
Because this was happening during the transition when Reagan won the election.
And yes.
It was all happening at that time.
Exactly. And he obtained the release of these people and like helped through that process. And then basically Reagan said, like, on day two, I did this thing. And Jimmy Carter just like let him have it because the fate of the nation... He was like, just, it's fine, take credit for it. Yeah, all I cared about were these citizens getting the fuck out.
Which is very Jimmy Carter.
Yes, and like, it's fine if you take credit for it. You know, I don't care. I care that they're out, and so fine. I was ineffective, but there's no possibility, imagine, looking at Trump, that day two, like on the second day after inauguration, he was able to somehow strong arm the Iranians into like that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. It was like a 4-month process of like negotiating and doing shit. And then Carter just let him have it.
Yeah.
But anyway,
basically.
Yeah.
But anyway, the point is the reason that we have functioning embassies in countries around the world, including hostile adversary countries, is to further American interests.
Yes.
So you're talking about economic interests, trade interests, agricultural interests, scientific interests. And when you have an embassy on the ground, it allows for direct communication. It allows for the United States' position and its interest to be communicated directly on foreign soil.
Yes.
I mean, this is basic common sense stuff. And to be very glib about it and say, okay, well, we were trying to cut payroll and we don't need that anyway. I mean, of course, it's Russia, so it gives you pause right away when you do that. But, you know, just...
Any embassy.
It's just stupid. And it's so stupid that the people around Trump, when asked about it, the only thing they could say, oh, well, that's a joke. He was being sarcastic.
Right, and, because it's so detrimental to our interests in that part of the world.
Well, it's so stupid.
That would be like saying, you know, there's a fire burning over there, so I'm just... Like, there's a fire in my kitchen... Or my bedrooms. I'm just going to shut the door. I'm sure it'll be fine.
I'm trying to save on my water bill. I'm
trying to save on my water bill. So I'm just going to shut the door and I'm sure it'll be fine. I'm not going to look at the fire. I'm not going to deal with the fire. I'm not going to be present. I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to let it burn and I'm sure it won't burn the house down. And then it burns the fucking house down because you weren't there. You shut the door and you drove to the grocery store. Like, you have to be there and put the fucking fire out.
Yeah.
On the ground, in the room with the fucking fire extinguisher, in the room where it's burning. If you're not there, there's nothing you can do.
So I really think this is a case of just profound ignorance of the way American foreign policy works and what furthering American interests globally means. If the American embassy doesn't have anything to do with promoting the Trump brand or the Trump hotel, then he literally doesn't fucking care.
No, he doesn't care. It doesn't have anything to do with what does he look like to the media. Does it make him more money, and is the Trump brand stronger?
So in order to A, save face and not piss off his friend, Putin, I think that's literally he was being sincere.
He's blackmailer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, well, that's fine. I was trying to save on payroll anyway. We don't need those American diplomats in Moscow at the United States Embassy, which
is
crazy
town. Everybody except his insane 27% whatever supporters is like, oh, my God. But his supporters are like, right? Why do we need to be in Russia anyway? They don't know any more than he does. They're all in this little ignorant club well, who fucking cares?
Well, let me give you an example, right? There's sort of conflicting information on the role that the American embassy and its diplomats had during the Cuban Missile Crisis. But I can tell you that on the eve of what might have been full-on war leading to a nuclear exchange, that Robert F. Kennedy went and met with Ambassador de Brennan at the Russian embassy in Washington, D.C. And probably stopped. Now, it was more complicated than that. They were exchanging messages from back channels, and there was a reporter talking to a spy.
Yeah.
But the point is, they got in a room and talked literally hours before we might have invaded Cuba, and we did not know at the time that Castro had mid-range tactical nuclear weapons that he was prepared to use on American troops. That's World War III, people. And we avoided that because...
In part, because there was someone representing Russia in Washington, D.C. that Robert F. Kennedy could go drive in a car 10-minute drive and sit in a room
with... Who was Attorney General at the time.
Yes, right. And Kennedy's like a close advisor and whatever. But like, go sit in a room with a 10-minute drive and go, the fuck? Yeah, fuck are we doing?
Let's please work not this out do before this. We go to war.
Now, there's... we don't have that now. But we save on payroll.
Well, potentially we could lose that in Moscow.
That's insane.
It is beyond insane.
There is, so we get to this point and some rational person goes, oh my God, here, Johnny, come talk to me. I'm Sergey. Let's talk. We have lunch together and shit.
Yeah.
What are we doing? We have to fucking not do this. No, Johnny's gone. Sergey's just like, phone call? You want to like Skype? No.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not effective.
They could do that, but it's not
the same. Not effective. You need to be in the room with a person, trust me, to get your fucking point across.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's insane. Yep. And we need to respond in kind to these sort of things. And it's unclear we will. So that's another situation to keep an eye on. But God, it's so complicated, the Russian relationship right now, obviously, for so many reasons.
Yes.
And that finally brings us to news this week that Paul Manafort, who had been subpoenaed and supposedly was cooperating, the FBI did not find that was sufficient and actually did a pre-dawn raid of his residence, a no-knock warrant raid.
Let me talk about that for a second.
Yes, please.
I work for lawyers. Okay. So Paul Manafort has long been under investigation during the Russia thing, right? Mueller's investigation's all about it. And supposedly he's been cooperating, providing documents and all the things. Previous investigations, such as the investigation into Scooter Libby over the CIA unmasking thing with
Valerie Plame.
Yes, yes. That, also the Bill Clinton whole thing with Monica Lewinsky, all that. Those both had special investigators, and neither of them ever used search warrants. Okay?
No knock warrants.
Not even search warrants.
Yeah.
Not search warrants. So search warrants require that you go before a judge and you provide enough evidence to that judge that a crime has been committed on a property or that evidence of a crime exists on a property, that the judge looks at that and says, there's probable cause here to assume that a crime has been committed and you are allowed to now go into that person's home without their consent and search their home. Without their knowledge and without their consent. That is a really big barrier in the criminal justice system. To have a federal judge, particularly on a case that is this high profile, to have a federal judge look at the evidence, and we don't get to know what that is, to look at the evidence
not yet,
and say, there is enough evidence here to prove that there is probable cause that a crime has been committed and evidence of that crime exists on this property. And the second barrier to that is that you do not have to notify the person and they do not have to be home. So this pre-dawn raid everyone's talking about is the result of a no-knock warrant. A no-knock warrant is an additional barrier that says we have evidence to believe this. And this is why, right?
And judges don't give these out like candy. Not for rich white guys.
No, especially not for rich white guys that are super connected to the White House. To say, not only can you go in and search this person's home without their consent, but you have provided me with enough probable cause to believe that this person, if they were aware of this raid, would destroy evidence.
And to this point that they have not been forthcoming with the evidence we have
which
requested.
Which is the craziest thing, because he supposedly has been cooperating with the special investigation.
Lawyer says, sure.
Which means that Mueller has enough evidence to provide to a federal judge that this person is withholding something. And it is financial in nature, that if he were aware of the search warrant, it would be destroyed. So the judge has decided, A crime has been committed, B, evidence of that crime is
being withheld.
Is being withheld and would be destroyed if the person was aware of a search warrant and it's at his home. So they conducted this pre-dawn raid. This is unheard of in American politics. This has never happened. There has been special investigations resulting in an impeachment of Bill Clinton, which didn't go anywhere because of
I thought they raided Edwards.
I don't know about that, but in terms of presidential politics.
Sure, sure.
This has never happened.
Yeah, Edwards was way after he was running for president.
Yeah, there's never been a no-knock search warrant during a presidential or a special investigation into a presidential administration.
No,
it's never happened.
Never for Watergate.
No.
Never for Lewinsky.
No.
Never for Scooter
nope,
Libby.
None of it. It's all been subpoenaing documents, investigating, interviewing people, but there's never been a no-knock warrant in a presidential special investigation. It's never happened.
And this means there is
some fucking compelling evidence that exists that now, they want.
A couple of interesting points. One, from the timeline that I understand, that no-knock raid happened the very morning after Manafort testified in
Correct.
Private.
Yes. So he testified in private to the Senate Judiciary Committee, or Intelligence Committee, I'm sorry. And the next day, I think it was like, you know, he testified at like 2 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the following morning at like 5 a.m.
So Mueller and his team had to have judged that day. They're holding back.
Yes, there's something in there that they don't want us to see.
And they could be shredding it right now. May have already shredded. He may have ran home and shredded everything before they could get there.
We don't know. But Mueller was certain enough, and he went to a federal judge who was certain enough. He had enough evidence to say, look, this is what's happening, and he is cooperating in quotes, but we think that this exists. And it has to be kind of specific, like, what exists? Well, this is what we think happened. This is the crime. You can't just say there's stuff. Like, people are accusing the Mueller investigation of phishing, right? That's mm-hmm. what Kenneth Starr did. He started with this, like,
whitewater
bullshit and ended up with a blowjob. Like, that's fishing. He's like, no. Like, we have this specific evidence of this specific crime that we believe was committed, and that evidence of that crime
seems to be financial
in this home. It is financial in nature.
Related to the Russians.
And if he knows about it, he's going to shred it, let us go in, and not tell him. That's stunning. In the legal world, like, it has sent shockwaves through the legal world.
What's been driving me crazy is you have all the talking heads, mostly on MSNBC, and even yesterday, Alex Witt was there asking an expert, what kind of message do you think Robert Mueller is trying to send by doing this? And we're like, no. We're not sending messages. We're obtaining evidence.
That's right. Now, there are some legal experts that say this is a very effective tactic. And one of the lawyers that Mueller hired was a person who took down Enron.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the tactics that he used was he went to the CEO of Enron and said, look, Skillings. Your wife mm-hmm. has been doing some tax shit that's pretty shady. If you don't come work with us and tell us the story and if you don't come in and basically rat on everybody else and let us know what's going on, we're going to prosecute your wife.
Mm.
And he said, no. And both of them served prison time.
Skillings
and his wife.
Skillings, Lay, and one of their wives.
His wife, yeah, served prison time because he wouldn't do it. So this is a tactic that is used. You sort of, you know, you twist them and you ring them and you get them to come in.
Apparently they're going after Manafort's son-in-law. It's always his son-in-laws.
What is with these people and their son-in-laws, for fuck's sake?
Use getting them to do their dirty work, I guess, like the mob.
I guess, like, their daughters are property and they find the best match and then that person becomes, I don't know. That's not how my life works, but,
it certainly isn't how we work.
No, it's not how my life works.
And also they're bringing in the secretary that arranged the meeting between Trump Jr.
These are the people that they're going to put their thumb on and put the pressure on. And they're going to say
oldest trick in the book.
Right. And part of the Manafort raid was, you have to separate that from the idea that it's just about pressure. It can be about pressure, and you can do a lot of things that are, you know, showy and pressury.
Mm-hmm.
But to actually get a federal judge to issue a search warrant,
they don't
that's
do
a
no-knock
that. Raid. Yeah, you don't do that to Mueller. Be like, look, judge, we just want to make Donald Trump nervous, and I want to make Paul Manafort, you know. No, it's not putting a fucking horse's head in a bed. It's literally saying, this is the evidence that we have, and the federal judge said that's adequate. So it's not just
pressure.
And
we have probable cause to believe.
Probable cause. A crime was committed.
Evidence is being withheld, and we believe that evidence will be destroyed if there is any tip-off to a search.
And remember, evidence of a crime having been committed. You cannot have a search warrant unless a crime has been committed.
Like, we kind of think there might be something here to find. No.
It's not like, you know, we think maybe Trump did something kind of shady and we don't really know, but like,
so we just want to raid all the things.
It's could be politically bad. No, a crime, something in the criminal code of the federal government happened. And there's evidence of that is in this house.
And everybody, I keep saying it over and over,
but it's like, that's huge.
Well, let's talk about what we know about Manafort, right? We know he's worked for a Russian-backed Ukrainian oligarch.
Yes.
Who is, you know, very pro-Putin. We know he's worked with the Bank of Cyprus.
Yes.
And we know he's worked with a lot of shady real estate deals here in this country that are assumed to be fronts for Russian money laundering.
Mob.
And it's also, there's also a lot of connections to Trump properties directly in terms of this alleged money laundering.
Correct. And then there was that like weird guy who was like on the fourth floor and Trump was on the fifth floor of this office building.
And very few mainstream media
outlets.
He is
a money launderer.
Yeah.
And he worked with Trump on like several real estate deals that were real estate deals that failed for Trump, but like didn't. So there still exists, but there was no money coming. It's just money laundering. He's a fucking money launderer.
So a lot of people might be very surprised as this investigation unfolds and the grand jury start questioning people and warrants go out about this stuff, because really for the most part, I know CNBC touched on all of it, but ABC, NBC, the talking heads, they don't really get into the money laundering stuff.
No.
They've really stayed away from it.
They have.
KGRO's been all over it. A lot of great publications. Washington Post has delved into it a little bit. The New Yorker's been all over it. Rolling Stone has been on it. But like the big
guys,
corporate media
can't believe it's true.
Yeah.
It's
they either can't believe it or they haven't done the investigative journalism. But they're going to have to now, because that's what Mueller is investigating and doing no-knock raids about.
That's what's going to take our president down, ultimately. It's not going to be about a fucking meeting with his son and a lawyer. It's not going to be that. It's going to be that he's a
money
fucking
money launderer.
It's going
to be money laundering.
He's going to have been laundering money through his hotels for the Russians through the New York mob for decades.
Yeah.
That's it. That's how he made money.
Oh, and guess what? The tax returns, Mueller can get those, probably already has those.
Somebody reported that he already does.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. That's very easy to attend.
That when he was able to get the no-knock search warrant, he was able to subpoena the tax records for the last 10
years. Of course. And that's only part of the story.
I mean, that's exactly.
That's a piece of the puzzle.
Tax returns are like, at this point, lol. It's about...
Well, it's not lol. There's a good reason he's wanted to keep them out of the public view. There's going to be some juicy stuff in there, but it's not the smoking gun.
No. It's not.
Smoking gun is probably in Paul Manafort's house, which is why they did a no-knock raid.
Yeah.
And then there's Flynn, who is ostensibly talking.
Yes, so, we think so. There's like some like, you know, I know Trump hates these unnamed sources, but he depended on them when Obama was president.
Sure.
That have said that Manafort has... Manafort's the person who tipped off the Mueller investigation about the Trump Jr. Russian lawyer meeting.
There's some people that think that, but they're not sure.
Well, there's some good sources that say that's true, and they say the reason for that is, you know, the first guy who talks is the least likely to go to jail. So if you know they're going to find this out, because they've come to you and they've said, like, here's five things no one knows, and there's an email about this thing that they're definitely going to fucking find. You're like, by the way.
Well, Manafort was at that meeting.
Kushner and I had this meeting with this lawyer from Russia because of this thing. Like, he told them.
Well, didn't Manafort deny being at that meeting at first? And then, like,
no, he said he didn't read to the end of the email, so he didn't know the context.
But he was still there.
He said, I'll come to a meeting I don't know anything about. I didn't read to the end of the email to understand why I'm going to it. That's a thing that happens.
Yeah, I don't even that at my job.
No. I can tell you that No.
That's not a thing you do
no.
in the real world.
And if that's true, his assistant should be fired. You don't just say, hey, boss, here's a meeting on your calendar.
Something,
no context.
Something with some Russian.
Don't worry about it. Something with some lady and Jared. Don't worry about it. No, you don't do that.
No,
you say, P.S., this is kind of a big deal. You might want to look at that.
Right.
This is maybe not.
Well, maybe it came on
do.
The secret bat email.
Yeah.
The secret Russian collusion bat email.
The secret...
That your
email.
Secretary doesn't even know about?
No, yeah. Well, it wouldn't be on his calendar, so.
Yeah, did they subpoena his Outlook?
Right, yes. I'm sure that they did.
Or his iMac calendar?
Yeah, no, it's just craziness. Okay, before we go, are we going to go to nuclear war with Russia? Or, I'm sorry, North Korea?
No, we're not.
Okay.
North Korea is not suicidal, and ultimately, Trump isn't...
In charge?
Yeah, not really. Well, he kind of is. But I don't think we'll stumble into anything with them unless somebody gets an itchy trigger finger. I mean, it's a combustible situation and it's dangerous. But no, I don't think we're going to ultimately going to war with North Korea. And then
to like build a bunker over the weekend.
And then like out of the blue, he said something about military intervention in Venezuela, which nobody even understands what that means or why he would say that. But he said it because it like popped into his brain.
Yeah. Which with that's a whole like we could do an entire international episode about what the fuck's going on with Kenya and Venezuela and North Korea. And like there's just a lot of unrest happening right now.
Anyway, that's about going to do it for us. Stay tuned tomorrow, Sunday, the 13th, to see about any anti-racism rallies wherever you are. I bet there's going to be one if you're in any sort of major city.
You know what? If there isn't one in your rural area, do it anyway.
Sure. Yeah. Go to City Hall, whatever it takes.
Yeah. Organize one.
Anyway, that's going to be it for us. At Irreverent Duo on Twitter, reverenttestimony@gmail.com, patreon.com/irreverenttestimony if you want to throw a few bucks our way. And hey, good local news. Cory Gardner's doing town halls.
Yeah, Cory Gardner's doing 3 town halls.
Get your questions ready. It's a farewell tour.
Yes.
Anyway.
We love you all. Stay safe.
Stay safe. I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
Adios.